Just to remind everyone, we are recording the call so that people can download it later from the website. Last month, I got a bunch of emails from people who said that they wanted to discuss the book if they had read it. So we had some discussion last month besides the guest speaker, Ray Uttenhove. So if you're on the call and you have any questions about the book or you've read the book and you want to discuss it, by all means, jump in. I'd rather discuss it than be the only speaker. But in the prior many months, when I would throw out questions to the audience, I heard crickets, so I just kept talking, which, you know, I'm able to do. But certainly if a topic comes up that you'd like to interject, I would love the interaction. So today's book is called Strengths-Based Selling by Tony Rutigliano and Brian Brim. It's listed on the website if you want to download that from Amazon. This is an extension of the book that we had last month, which is Strengths Finders, and it's a new theory that's out there. And I know a lot of companies and have heard from people that there are different companies using this this philosophy at their companies, where you are capitalizing and leveraging on people's strengths. The original author of this theory had interviewed through the Gallup poll thousands and thousands and thousands of employees at firms and said, and the main question was, are your strengths capitalized in your workplace? And I believe the response was 20% of all of the thousands and thousands and thousands of people surveyed said their strengths were capitalized. That the majority of the time, their bosses or their supervisors concentrated on improving their weaknesses. And the theory is, instead of worrying about your weaknesses, certainly you need to acknowledge what your weaknesses are, and especially in sales, but you really should capitalize and leverage on strengths, because that will make you more productive. So that was book one. Book one talked about the theory and the philosophy. And if you bought that book, there was a website that you went to. You had a code in that book. You went to the website. You took the survey, and you found out what your five strengths are. And this is book part two, which is called Strengths-Based Selling. So it takes the philosophy of, you know, leveraging your strengths, and then in this book it applies it to the selling process, which is, you know, what all of us do that are on this call. We have some people, most of the people on the call are in leasing, but we have some investment salespeople. We have some directors of leasing departments. We have some office brokers on the call. But I would say the majority of what most of us do on the call is based on sales. So I thought it would be a good next step to talk about how we take our strengths and we adapt them to the sales process. I was always in the camp that if you were an outgoing person and you were a relationship-based salesperson, that was what contributed to the majority of your success. And something that I learned in this book is if you're an analytical person, it takes the strength of being an analytical person and it adapts it to the sales process as well, which I love learning something new every day. So I liked seeing that. And I know as a former director of leasing, I always joke with my fellow directors of leasing when, especially if they worked for me and now they have become directors of leasing and they go, oh, we gave you such, you know, heck when we worked for you, this is such a hard job. And the reason it's such a hard job is because if you have 8 to 10 leasing people on your team, none of them are the same. They are all different. They all have different strengths. They all have different weaknesses. And to be able to have a book or a resource help guide you with how do you help the person that has the analytical strength in sales? How do you help the person who's got the command strength in sales? You know, my five, you know, when you take the survey, they give you your five dominant themes or your five dominant strengths, and mine are maximizer, woo is like, you know, being outgoing, and activator, you know, taking action, communication, and significance. Significance is getting the prospect to understand the significance of if you lease here versus maybe a competing site. And what the book does is it goes through the parts of it that I'm going to focus on today is there's the first 8 chapters talking about defining your strengths, the difference between strengths and weaknesses, and then applying them to the following: prospecting, which I, you know, everyone knows I love, assessing opportunity, identifying solutions, building advocacy, negotiating and closing, and serving, retaining, and growing those customers. So in each chapter, for those of you that don't have the book, when you take the survey and you have your 5 dominant themes, in each chapter, for example, let's say negotiating and closing in chapter 7, it has what they identify 5 themes, and let's say if you are the learner theme, that you like to learn, and it'll say this is how in negotiating and closing the learner theme, you know, capitalizes on their natural strengths in the negotiating and closing phase. So I really enjoyed the book a lot. The original quote that opens the book is from Meng Tzu, Chinese proverb, and the quote said, "Those who follow the part of themselves that is great will become great, and those who follow the part that is small will become small." So going on the theory of, you know, like, for example, one of my biggest weaknesses, you know, I could never be a successful investment broker because the thought of sitting down and going through pages and pages of Argus, you know, I'd rather, you know, eat liver for dinner 7 nights a week. That's just a weakness of mine. So when I'm out now looking at properties to buy, right now I'm negotiating 2 contracts for 2 new properties, I make sure that I have someone on my team or a partner that likes to do Argus, that likes to analyze Argus. I'll walk the property with them. I'll drive the market with them. I'll have all kinds of input on projected returns the way I know how to say it. But to sit down, you know, with an equity partner and talk about, you know, what the equity that I need to buy the property, I better have a partner sitting next to me that understands Argus and can talk the lingo, because that's for sure my weakness. And even though in my past life, before I came to this philosophy and read about this, you know, I've taken the Argus classes, you know, we had someone come in and teach us Argus, you know, I certainly know and believe that I need to be familiar with it, but I don't need to become the best Argus person. It's better to partner up with someone that is a good Argus person and that I concentrate and improve my strengths or strengthen my strengths in what I do best, which is, you know, the wooing of the people, the communication of the people, understanding, you know, and helping them understand the significance of the connecting of the dots. So, you know, as you guys, most of you are leasing, everyone knows I love to canvas, and it's very easy for me to go knock on doors. If that's something that you're struggling with, but you're a great researcher and you can communicate well and all the other strengths they talk about in the book, if you're not the person that can easily just go jump in a car and go visit, you know, 30 prospects, then partner with someone that can, or some firms have rookies or new leasing agents that do that, you know, more so, and then maybe there's a more senior agent who's closing. Not that you should ever stop prospecting, because I think that that's, you know, in my world, that's the nuts and bolts. But if whatever your weakness is, they talk about in the book, bringing in a partner or bringing, you know, having someone help you with that weakness instead of spending lots of time and energy focused on improving that weakness. That's basically the philosophy in a nutshell. So jumping in, on page 3, they talk about the wide variation in performance from salesperson to salesperson, and it talks about that many salespeople think and many sales trainers and leaders think, well, just go to that seminar and learn from that guy and copy what that guy does. And obviously we can't do that. And even if I came in and coached you, you can't copy what I do. You can't become best. You have to take what you've learned from people and what's adapted to your behavioral style and make it your own. Because if you try to copy what someone else does, it won't be authentic and the prospects will see through that. And they talk a lot about authenticity you know, when a lot of times when people go canvassing, people walk into a store, a retail store, and they're, oh, you know, I love your store, or, you know, this is such a cute store, or I love your merchandise. And if you really don't believe that, you really shouldn't be saying that, because the prospect's going to see right through that. And if that's, you know, you may have heard that that's what you're supposed to do, flatter the person. Certainly you make them feel important, but you do it in an authentic way. Ask them questions to the point where you are impressed with something, instead of just giving them BS flattering. You don't want to do that. It also talks about, it says there's on page 6 a word to the sales managers. And it says, sales managers, this book is for you too. This is going to help you understand what strengths can be applied to what areas in sales, and help you identify which of your teammates have which strengths. Deb Kolsky was on the line last month, and she talked about how she had her salespeople take the survey, and now she understands which ones have which strengths, and she can apply them and actually team them up in certain situations, you know, with national retailers and regional retailers, you know, where we sometimes in this new world have to become their real estate department, because a lot of the retailers have laid a lot of people off. The tenant rep brokers are doing a lot of the work. You know, we have to do some of the work for them. Again, research is, you know, I can do it, not my biggest strength. So I always like when I have interns working with me and I can put them to work. I can say, you know, hey, you know, where is the, take a point, you know, Deerfield and Federal, and say, where are the 5 surrounding Walgreens or CVSs or Chipotles, and have the interns who are learning the business and learning how to research and learning what's important. And, you know, we do things for them to present the case. And it talks about in this, on page 6, the sales managers identifying the strengths and identifying the needs for the prospects and matching those, you know, the strengths with the prospects and being the most productive. Being a multiplier and leveraging. It says that, you know, we've heard this before, the top 20%, you know, do the most work, or whatever that quote is. On page 8, they say that they met with top 25 leaders of big medical insurance sales teams, and they said that, what's the difference in performance between the company's top salespeople and all the rest? And they said that the best salespeople in their companies were 4 times more productive than their colleagues. And they said that the average company has hundreds of reps. And then they said they conducted an analysis of 250,000 sales reps working for 170 Gallup poll clients. And the results showed that the top 25% of the sales force was responsible for generating an average 57% of year-over-year sales increase in their companies. So in summary, the bottom 25% of the sales force was selling less than it had the year before. So, and they talked about that the companies that focused on strengths in relationship with productivity were the ones that were the most successful. And to develop your natural strengths, your natural talents into strengths, you need to add the skills, the knowledge, and the practice. And for many of you know, on the phone, the practice in my world is role-playing. And if you're uncomfortable with a situation, if you're about to call a national retailer and maybe you're new in the business, or maybe you can't, you've been trying to get through to this retailer, or you've been trying to get through to the local prospect, and you're nervous about it, and, you know, nervousness, your nerves will relate to a lack of confidence. And, you know, it's very important to sound confident on the phone, or be confident when you're walking into a local retailer. So grab the person next to you. Grab, you know, your boyfriend, your spouse, your kid. Grab someone and role play with them, and challenge that person to ask you lots of questions that might come up. Because the more comfortable you are in the situation, obviously, the more confident you'll be, and the more productive the end of the call will be, or the end of the appointment. But they go back and they say that that training is important, but, you know, and you can learn skills. You can learn skills how to pace a negotiation meeting. You can learn how to look for negotiation cues. But it says you can't learn to be fearless. So, and you can't learn only experience teaches you the timing of when you should walk away from a deal. And, you know, I see that over and over again. I think I brought this up on the last call. A client recently brought me in and said, I want to talk to you about one of my leasing agents. You know, he's great at what he does, but he's having a problem closing deals. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, you know, and it's we were doing mid-year goal reviews. I think it was August. And he said, he's like lost 40 or so deals this year, in 9 months into the year. And I said, how is that possible? And it turns out that it wasn't that he couldn't close the deals. He had spent time and energy on deals that were never deals to begin with. And that's just a crucial, crucial part in what we do for a living, whether we're doing investment sales, whether we're looking for third-party leasing assignments, whether we're leasing to Panera Bread, a Publix, or Joe's Bait Shop. We have to understand and recognize when we've put enough time and energy in the deal and they're not returning our calls, we're not getting the buying cues, we've got to cut bait, no pun intended, but we've got to cut our losses and move on because time is our commodity. And that is a huge thing that we have to learn from experience, and we can learn that. That's not a skill that can be trained. That is a skill that we can only learn from experience and learn from others and learn from leaders and other successful people in the business. And they talk about on page 21, which I addressed earlier, it said he said Pablo is lousy at cold calls. He finds it difficult to imagine other people's lives, even though when he knows them well, empathizing with strangers is nearly impossible. So empathy, which is one of the strengths, was not Pablo's, one of his strengths. He said to ease his manager's concern, Pablo took a direct approach, and he showed his manager how spending too much time in his areas of weakness was costing the company. So his manager partnered him up with another person who loved cold calling, and they made that work, and his productivity went up 30%. On chapter 23, they start the chapter three called prospecting, and they talk about how, which is a common theme that we've discussed again and again, how important the gatekeepers are. I was canvassing yesterday with a client, and we went into a retail store. I had mentioned to this client that she should go see this retailer about a month ago, and she said, I can never find this guy. And I said, well, you know, I knew the guy had three stores, and I said, have you been to all three stores? Have you dropped off the flyer? You know, you've called? And she said, yes, yes, yes. And she said, even the girls at one of the stores even, you know, gave me, you know, his office number, and I have his assistant's name. And I said, okay, well, we're going to go to one of the stores. So we went to one of the stores yesterday, and she's this particular leasing agent is very good at talking to the clerks in the store, and just very empathetic, and she can get information. So while we're in the store, she gets the clerk to go into Outlook and open the guy's calendar from corporate and find out where he was going to be today. And at 11:45 today, between 11:30 and noon today, he was going to be at this other store that he was having an issue with. And the clerk at the store said, go to that store tomorrow between 11:30 and 12, and he should be there. So I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear from her to see if she, you know, met up with the guy finally face-to-face. But that, again and again, I find that it's very important to be careful to not dismiss the gatekeepers. They are, you know, part of the team, and they're so important, and the people who can woo them, woo is, you know, one of the strengths in the book that is one of my strengths, those of us that can woo those gatekeepers, you'll get so much more information from them regarding the decision makers. But I was so excited when she goes, oh, let me just pull up his calendar on the corporate Outlook, and I'll let you know where he is tomorrow. And that was brilliant. So I loved that. And definitely make sure that you focus on and don't dismiss the people that can make it happen for you, you know, in other words, called the gatekeepers or the clerks in the stores. They talk about, in the same chapter, about measuring. You know, they say one of the truisms of business is you cannot manage what you don't measure. They also have, on page 30, a sample tracking sheet. They say that you know, to list the contacts you've made, you know, divide the number of the meetings that you've set up. So on page 30, those of you that don't have the book, if you email me later, Josie can send you this tracking sheet. But it just says, and it says, even if you leave a voice message, check off that you've made the cold call. You know, it's so important that, and they talk about conversion rate. And some of you that have worked with me, you know, I have my tracking sheet, and I tell you a story about how I had a leasing agent that was great at the cold calling and great at the getting the appointments, but his productivity fell down significantly from showing space to closing the deal. And luckily, he had been tracking this so that I could, as his leader, could look at it and identify where the problem was. And then I spent a few days with him showing space and worked on some areas that he could improve on so that he could improve those numbers from closing deals from the showing space. But without tracking your numbers, it's hard for you to look at it and see where you could make some changes and also your leaders. So on page 30 of the book, it has the sample tracking sheet. They talk about how important it is to, again, develop and rehearse your pitch, not having a quote-unquote memorized pitch, but know what you're going to say. You know, when I walk into a space, you know, before the economy fell down, I used to say, what are your expansion plans? And then people, when I realized in 07, 08, and 09, people started laughing at me. So I realized I had to say, you know, are you happy with your current location? Are you looking to downsize, to expand? You know, you have to ask different questions. So you have to learn through experience what people are responding to when you're making phone calls. And again, that comes through your natural strengths. You know, if you're not afraid to pick up the phone, if you're not afraid to walk in, but then maybe doing more research and working on your communication skills to make sure that the delivery that you're delivering to the prospect is what they're looking for. They talk about warming up the cold call. You know, this is on page 35. When I'm calling a national or regional retailer, and I know I've heard retailers tell me this, please talk about this when you're, you know, talking to some of your clients. If I'm not going to call and say, hey, do you know you want to be out at my property at Sawgrass, we usually here do the research, whether it's with myself, which is probably not me because it's not one of my strengths, but my assistant or an intern that may be working with us, you know, where are they? So that I can, when I can get on the phone, I can say, I know you're down the street, but I went into the store and you're smaller than your new prototype. Or I know you're down the street, but you've been there for 20 years. You know, you don't have, you know, my property has a higher or larger parapet for signage. Or, and again, they talk about later on in the book in when they talk about the strength of communication and learning that when you to understand what your competition is and be familiar with your competition. So, you know, in our world, you drive your sites that are competition to the spaces that you might be leasing. You, if you're investment sales, you know the other investment sales brokers and what they are talking to the clients about and what their strengths are versus, you know, if you are an investment sale broker and your competition is working on four or five sales right now, and maybe you're only working on one or two, to talk about the fact that you've got the time and the bandwidth. But we need to know what our competition's about so that when you're working with a prospect, for example, a local tenant, and he says, oh, yeah, I'm looking across the street, or I'm looking at three opportunities in the Davie submarket, and I know all the competition in the Davie submarket, and I know that every one of those shopping centers already has the use from the prospect I'm speaking to. That's knowledge that I'm going to have in my head. I'm not going to throw that out at them and make them wrong and insult them and act like a know-it-all, but I'm going to know about it in my head, so I know that I have the leverage in that negotiation that maybe he thinks he's, you know, talking to the tower shops or talking to the three centers in my vicinity, but I know all those four centers already have a sub shop or already have a cell phone store, And I'm friends with the leasing agents, so I know I'm pretty much up to date as far as tenants moving out, you know, and creating a use vacancy. And it's so important for us, and that goes back to, if you're not an analytical person or if you're not a learner person where they talk about doing the research, partnering up with someone that is or does so that you can do what you do best. But they talk about warming up the cold call. So before I call Publix or CVS or Walgreens, I already have sent them a map in advance. You know, hey, Bridget, I'm going to send you a site that I'm putting under contract. Here's a map showing all of the Publixes, you know, in the south, north, east, and west, you know, and the drive times and the miles. And so that when I call her, I've warmed her up. She knows why I'm calling her. If they have if they're already working on something that I'm not aware of, it could be a short and sweet conversation. But if it is an area that they're looking for and it's a hole in the donut, I've warmed her up. And, you know, we should be doing that. And I know some of the larger firms have research capabilities that can help you, but it's quick and it helps get to the point and get to the decision quick, as fast as possible, which is what we talked about earlier. Time is your commodity. And just like you need to cut your losses earlier than later, you need to maximize the time. So if you can do a quick Google Earth map search, which, you know, those of us like me that have been in the business 25 years, how lucky do we all have it today to where we don't have to go to the yellow pages and figure out where the locations are. We can do it pretty quickly right from our desktop. They talk about, again, in this chapter with prospecting, at the end of every chapter, they have, for example, in these, they talk about how the strengths of belief, analytical, arranger, significance, and includer, and there's a little paragraph under each where they talk about, for example, one of my strengths is significance. So they say, tie your cold calling to great achievement. Focus on how successful cold calling will ultimately set you apart from those who cannot master it. Set lofty objectives, goals, everyone knows I love goals, about connecting with people whom others cannot reach. And when you succeed, let someone close to you know about your achievement. So in every chapter where it links sales to production, whether it's prospecting, assessing opportunity, and so on, at the end of every chapter they have the five strengths. So if you know what your five strengths are, you can see if they have yours listed and then apply it to the skill for closing deals. The next chapter, chapter 4 on page 41, talks about assessing opportunity. And this chapter is a lot about applying your strengths, increasing your odds of success, lasting connections with people that can influence the prospects, and just, you know, learning about who the decision makers are and taking advantage of and levering your relationship with the gatekeepers to find out, you know, they say a lot in this book that no longer is there one decision maker. Usually there are a few or many. And they have a story about how a husband and wife walk into an electronics store and how the sales clerk basically is just talking to the man and completely ignoring the woman, just assuming, which we all know, you know, we never want to assume, that the woman isn't a part and parcel of the decision-making process and how, you know, they didn't buy the electronics from that store that day. And it's important if we're showing space, you know, if there are two partners. A lot of times what I find, if I'm showing space and there's two people, the quiet one is the decision-maker, not the one that's asking all the questions. So, but they talk about understanding the prospect's financials and learning as much as you possibly can in the process and not being afraid to ask the questions. And they say that curiosity, you know, if you are the strength of learner and input, they said that they gave an example of a woman from Jones Lang LaSalle. She says, I'm constantly using the resources around me. And she says, you know, if my prospect wants to move a few walls, I want to find out what the cost of drywall per linear foot is today. So she goes, let's, you know, call construction and find out. She says that learner and input, she uses both to research her opportunities. She demonstrates how curiosity leads to asking the right questions and then researching to get the right answer. So again, what I found was very interesting is before I read these two books, I thought sales was all about people who were outgoing, you know, asked a lot of questions, you know, made the people feel important. And I'm learning from these two books that analytical people and people that are more quiet than maybe I am, and you know, can also be good at sales, but in different ways. And I found that very interesting. And you know, again, like I like to learn new things, especially in this business of coaching and training. They talk about increasing your odds for success, making sure that you're, you know, talking to the right person, forecasting your chance of success. You know, and I remember 26 years ago I worked for Donna Abood, and when we would talk about our pipelines, she would have us put percentages of success, percentages of the odds that we thought we could close the deal. And, you know, I haven't done that in years. I think just in my gut or instinctually, I know if I spend more time on the Panera deal versus the other deal, whatever the other deal is, I think instinctually sometimes we do that, but it's probably good to look at your pipeline and put the numbers down to make sure you're staying on track and spending more of your time and attention on the deal that you have the most likelihood to close. And I know that's hard sometimes when we work for larger companies and we're pulled in a million different directions, but you know, it's probably something to discuss with your director of leasing as well. Recognizing the buying signals, understanding soft closes. They talk a lot about making sure you know when the prospect's ready to close and not to keep selling. You know, I've seen that as well where, you know, the prospect says, well, what's the next step? And the leasing agent starts talking about, well, you know, we need to send you a lease and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they start talking and selling again. You know, recognize when the soft close is there and when the person's ready to buy, and then move on. Get the lease in their hands, or, you know, get the financial information that you need to do your lease approval sheet with your company, but move on and get it closed. It says, one of the things it says, it's nice to be knowledgeable about what you're doing, but eventually you have to let them buy. This is not a business of showing up and throwing up, which I say all the time. You know, some people think that it's our job that when they walk into the space, we need to tell them the 101 things about the space that we have learned about. Well, that's not our job. Our job is to answer their questions. What do you want to know about the space? And then give them those answers. If they haven't asked about the other 33 things that you know about your center and your market, I don't think it's necessary to fill them all in. You might sell yourself out of a deal because you might tell them something that they don't like or that they don't want to know about. You talk about talking to your customers who you have done business with, in our world, our tenants. Or what also, if you're dealing with a prospect that's got other locations, what do they like about their other locations? You know, what adds to their success? What have they learned? Sometimes with local mom and pops that have two or three locations, they may have never thought about that. They may not have thought, well, gee, you know what? I'm on the corner, you know, facing, you know, east in two of my locations, and those two are my highest sales. Or, you know, I'm in on the end cap, or I'm next to, you know, Sprint, and they bring, you know, every time an Apple iPhone goes on the market, I have a line of people at my door. So evaluate, you know, and help them and ask them the right questions so that you can put, you know, suggest to them the right space or the right shopping center. And sometimes it might not be your shopping center. And it's okay to say, you know, I don't know if this particular space or this particular center would be good for you. It's okay sometimes to send them away because, and or suggest they go to the guy next door because that level of integrity. I mean, if you think and you know based on your experience that you're not the right solution for their needs and you're honest with them about that, that's going to go eons further. You might get 10 other pieces of business from that, even if not for them. Or it may come back around that they need you again in the future and they're for sure going to call you. I had a client once I was interviewing for an assignment in an inner city neighborhood in Miami. And The client was an Orthodox Jewish man, and here I am. Okay, I'm not Jewish, I'm not a man, and my competition was a Jewish Latin guy. And I said, okay, I knew right away, I just knew I wasn't going to get the assignment, and I was okay with that. But while I was in the meeting, we identified it was a 40-acre site, and I said to the potential client, you know, look, there's only two users for this site. There's only two users. There's no one else that's going to go on this site. And I'm happy to give you the names and the numbers of the brokers for this site. And you can just call them directly. You really don't need to hire myself or my competitor to do this deal. And he said, well, that's very nice of you, but, you know, we really need the skill set and the experience. You know, we've never negotiated a huge anchor lease before. And I'm like, okay, but I'm telling you, in a week we'll know which of the two are interested, if any, and then, you know, we'll move on. And maybe you rezone it to industrial if it's not a retail play. He ended up on the way out of the meeting, my competitor walks in, and I said, you know, congratulations. I'm sure you're going to get this gig. And, you know, I know him very well. We were laughing about it. Well, the next day, the guy calls me and goes, you got the job. And I said, I was shocked that I got it. And I said, and his dad, who didn't speak any English but was in the meeting, and they were, you know, he was translating for him. He said, my dad loved the fact that you were just going to turn over, you know, hand us over the name and number of the real estate rep for this large retailer company and just not take the business. He just couldn't believe that. And so I ended up, I've done three things with this client, big fees in all three things, and they have referred other business to me. So sometimes, you know, the right play or the right move is, you know, if you can't help them or if you, you know, if they don't really need you, it's okay to say someone else can help you better, or I can't provide you the solution. So I think it comes back to you tenfold. They talk about understanding and calculating the customer's switching cost, which I thought in our, you know, a lot of these sales books, you know, they're talking about manufacturing and, you know, other businesses, not our business. But I thought that was very interesting. You know, when we're out there and we're knocking on doors and we're cold calling or canvassing or where people call us and you know, it's a relocation possibility, you know, I don't think I know really the switching costs or the relocation costs. And I don't think the prospect really knows. And again, I'm not going to be the one that's going to go out and do the research on that, but I may call my, you know, friendly GC or my architect and ask the prospect or guide the prospect that it's really important for us to figure out what those relocation costs are, because when it comes to them making a decision, you know, they should really have the facts on that. And I think a lot of times retailers, again, local mom and pops that don't have construction departments, they're kind of flying in the wind on that. And we all know it's always more than they ever thought. And later on in the book, they talk about after the sale and how important after the sale is. And we've all been there where we've signed leases with people. They have to start paying rent. They're not open for business, and they've used a lot of their capital up. So I think that when we're talking to local mom and pops, even if they have three or four or five locations, the switching costs they talk about on page 51, I think we should pay a little bit more attention to that. And speaking about paying attention, I think I've spoken to you earlier on another call about the importance of that first call in. When that prospect calls you, okay, you have more leverage in that instance than you will in any future instance in negotiations with that prospect. So take an extra 5 minutes to ask all the questions. Ask why are they calling about your property? What were the reasons that this prospect liked about your property? Or if you're an investment sale broker on the phone, because we have a few of them, why is the seller calling you versus your competition, or, you know, because you want to know why they're calling you, and you want to know if they've had an instance in the past where they've sold property, what did they like about the process, what did they not like, you know, if it's a tenant, what did they like about their current location, what do they not like, and write all this stuff down. Take an extra 5 minutes, ask five more questions, because those details later on, trust me, when they hang up the phone and they pick up that black and yellow book, Negotiations for Dummies, and they're told to, you know, shut up and stop talking. It's too late. You already got most of the information that you needed, that you will need later to help compare your property with the competition that they're saying that your property is up against. And, you know, but you know, once they hang up and they talk to their partner, or they talk to their neighbor who's a residential real estate person, or they talk to their brother-in-law who's an attorney, and even though he's a litigation attorney and has nothing to do with real estate, they're all going to say, don't tell him anything. Well, if you got a lot of the information on the first call, you're ahead of the game. So get the details. Find out who is the decision maker. Find out how much capital that they think they're going to need to invest. How much capital do they have to invest? You know, how is their credit? Did they, you know, have a home in Fort Myers that's going to show up? You know, ask all the questions, because at that time they're interested in you, and they'll answer the questions because they want something from you. They want you to tell them what is the rent. They want you to tell them if you've got the space available. They want information from you. So you have, at that point in all of the negotiation, that's the time that you can get the most information. Before I finish, Josie's just given me the high sign. That time, that flew by, and I'm not even halfway through the book. Let me tell you a few announcements. The next Book of the Month Club is going to be on November 29th. It will be our last Book of the Month Club for 2011. This year flew by. I don't have the book yet. I'll be announcing it soon. On November 12th, we have Waterworks. If you, those of you that heard about our ropes course where we jumped, 12 of us jumped off a 30-foot pole, it was like crazy. Talk about getting an infusion of mojo and confidence. Similar activities, team building, confidence building, but we're going to do it in the water. It's on Dania Beach in Griffin on November 12th. Go on my website. You can sign up. We have two more spots available for that. In December, on December 28th, I'm going to be doing a goals setting webinar. Those of you that know me know how into goal setting goals I am. And then November 15th and 16th, I'll be at the Atlanta ICSC. If you're there, you know, come see me. November 17th is the Hard Rock ICSC. And then the December New York ICSC. So a lot of things coming up to end the year. In 2012, we're going to do something completely different than the Book of the Month Club, which I'll be announcing, which is going to be a lot of fun. But you know, again, the remaining chapters, in Chapter 5, they talk about identifying solutions, which talks about solving people's needs, not just telling them all of the benefits of your property, but solving their needs, so important, and researching the companies before you meet with them. So, you know, I've told some of you before, Google Alert is my best friend. If I'm about to meet with a company, I Google Alert them. So I get press releases. Anytime they're in the media, it pops up on my BlackBerry, and I'll learn little tidbits. They talk about hero time, quote-unquote hero time. They say that the real magic lies in how you stay in touch and what else you can do to get the relationship closer to producing revenue for you. Once you get that in your blood and you realize that you're pretty good at this, you see that every opportunity is hero time for salespeople. I send articles all the time. If I'm reading an article about, you know, someone told me the other day they were dying to learn how to make risotto, and I found an article about risotto and I sent it out. You know, I see articles because I have kids all the time. I'm reading stuff about kids, and if I have friends that have kids, like 2 weeks ago I talked to, I think, Gabe Navarro about our kids being overscheduled, you know, between piano and Spanish and sports. And, you know, I saw that article and I sent it to him. People love that you're thinking about them. That's hero time. So, you know, do some hero time. And you know, the other thing is they talk – a lot of times local tenants, they say no about your competition and what they might be saying to your prospects. You know, a lot of times when I'm talking to a local prospect, I'm showing them space, and they say, well, we're looking, you know, in the market. I say – I educate them about CAM. If they don't have other locations and it's a startup, CAM is a new, you know, that's a new theory for them, or, you know, or a new concept for them, and I educate them about what that means, because a lot of times our competition, you know, doesn't educate them, and it's a surprise in the lease. And sometimes they're already pregnant, you know, on that space. And, you know, I educate the prospects so they ask the right questions to my competition. So, you know, definitely do that. But the book's great. You know, they talk about building advocacy. At the end of the book, they go through every strength, and they talk about different, like mine, one of mine is communication, and they give four action points on how to, it says, for example, the action two on communication. It says, tell stories based on customer experiences. Prospects and customers alike may be more attentive when you tell stories that have relevance to their culture. Well, if any of you on the phone call know me, I'm a big storyteller, so of course, you know, that's communication is one of my strengths because I'm always telling stories. I think people can relate to that. So on that note, I hope you guys have a great Halloween. I hope all of the Florida football teams win this weekend. And, you know, I hope to see you around at some of these ICSEs that are coming up. So take care, and thanks for participating in the call. Bye-bye.